that most of you did. I think that you'll enjoy very much the Bach Aria Festival and Institute for this year that is taking place, as it does every year, here at the State University at Stony Brook campus, over at the Stoller Center for the Arts. And among the events that will be happening this Wednesday, there'll be an 8:30 p.m. concert, including Bach's Sonata in G Minor for Oboe and Harpsichord, Motet No. 1, a group of arias, and Vivaldi's Four Seasons. There'll also be a poetry reading. On the next Saturday, there will be an 8:30 p.m. concert featuring the opening chorus from Cantata 8, a group of arias, the Sonata in E Major for Flute and Continuo, and Cantata No. 26. And that will be preceded, that 8:30 p.m. concert next Saturday will be preceded by a 7 p.m. pre-concert lecture called Why Translate Bach? And next Sunday, a week from tomorrow, at 3 p.m., an Artist Fellows recital featuring Henry Purcell's Golden Sonata for Two Violins, a couple of groups of arias, and Trio Sonata in E Minor by Bach. On Wednesday, June 21st at 7 p.m., a Young People's Concert entitled Painting Pictures with Music. On Friday, June 23rd at 8:30 p.m., an Artist Fellows Concert featuring the duet for two flutes by W.F. Bach, a group of arias and duets, Trio Sonata for Two Oboes and Continuo by Handel, and that'll be followed by another group of arias and duets. And those are just some of the events taking place at the Stoller Center for the Arts here on the Stony Brook campus for this year's Bach Aria Festival and Institute, an annual event. For more information, you can call 516-632-7239. That's 516-632-7239. Stay tuned now for Eric Corley and Brain Damage, which will follow Joel Block and Stardate. And tonight, when I was preparing the cartridges that have the music themes for Eric's program, I pull them out ahead of time. Generally, when a person is doing a program, they usually get ready the next person's theme, so there's a smooth transition. But I found that I couldn't find his closing theme for a few seconds. So there was the possibility, for a brief moment there, that Eric was going to start his show tonight and would never be able to finish it ever, because he had no closing theme. But fortunately, we found the closing theme, and he'll be able to finish his program. Not that I don't like to hear his program, but that this way he can go home and get some rest and not have to go on to eternity with this one program tonight. But, of course, he'll have many more programs subsequent Saturdays, as he will tonight. Brain Damage, coming up right after Stardate. Here on 90.1 FM, WUSB, Stony Brook, Long Island's first station of the 90s.
Stardate, June 10th. The planet Uranus has 15 known moons. The two largest moons were discovered in the year 1787 by William Herschel, who discovered the planet itself 6 years earlier. In 1851, William Lassell found two more moons for Uranus. And in 1948, Gerard Kuiper discovered moon number 5. When these moons were discovered, the other known planets and moons all had names from Greek and Roman mythology. But the first 5 moons of Uranus were given names of magical characters from the literature of 2 great English authors. The 2 largest moons were christened Oberon and Titania, the king and queen of fairies in William Shakespeare's play A Midsummer Night's Dream. The 2 moons found by Lassell are Ariel and Umbriel, fairies in a poem by Alexander Pope. Ariel is also the name of an airy, tricksy spirit in Shakespeare's play The Tempest, and the 5th moon is named from The Tempest. It's called Miranda. In 1986, the Voyager spacecraft flew past Uranus and in a few short hours discovered 10 new moons. These moons were officially named last summer by the International Astronomical Union, or IAU. This is the only body, by the way, that's recognized by the scientific community as having the right to name things in our solar system and beyond. The IAU followed the earlier tradition and gave the Uranian moons names from Shakespeare and Pope. The new names are Cordelia, Ophelia, Bianca, Cressida, Desdemona, Juliet, Portia, Rosalind, Belinda, and Puck. For June 10th, that's Stardate. And for the McDonald Observatory, I'm Joel Block.
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in...
is 2. Please make a note of it.
Please repeat.
The number you have reached has been changed. The new number has been disconnected.
This is your program, Moscow Mailbag. Here's Joe Adamov to answer your questions. Jay Green, Brooklyn, New York. What is your crime rate?
Well, the Pravda for the 10th of May shows that that crime last year grew drastically compared to the previous year. I'll give you a few examples. Premeditated murder grew by 14%. There were 16,710 premeditated murders. Grave bodily injury grew by 31%, robbery 42%, burglaries by 44%. That's all in the course of 1 year. But compared to the years of stagnation, say if you take the years 79 to 84, crime today is lower than in those years, though it has grown within a year. Pravda also stressed that the ban on sales of alcohol at first sobered up the nation, so to say, but for a very short time. Then home distillery filled the gap, and crime went up. Our lawyers are firm on that we should always adhere to the presumption of innocence, that our investigation bodies do not always have the necessary equipment, that a defense lawyer should be able to defend his client from the first day of arrest, that lawyers should be servants of the law and not the lackeys of the powers that be. Very wise words.
Richard Evans, Dallas, Texas. Why did the Soviets not compete with the U.S. in the race to the moon?
We stressed at that time that we did not believe in space research as an arena for prestigious competition or as a fight for a better image. We said at the time that if an American were to land on the moon first, we would shake his hand and congratulate him. Be that as it may, one of our songs had the words that we will leave our footprints on the dusty roads of distant planets. That was one of the songs of those days. Incidentally, our automatic moon probes, which brought back samples of moon rock, and our moon rovers, which traveled on the surface of the moon and were driven from Earth, gave science no less than did the United States manned landings. This is a fact. But there's no denying the great effect that the United States landings by the Apollo crews had for United States prestige. This is a fact. My view is that we would have liked to share in this prestige. You may ask, well, why didn't we? Yes, we have the technology and we have the know-how. The United States sources admit this, but we did not have the powerful rocket like your Saturn that was necessary to carry out a manned moon landing. Today we have the Energia rocket, which can launch a payload of 100 tons.
Emil Palik, Lyndhurst, Ohio. On February 3, 1943, the final surrender was carried out in Stalingrad of the German 6th Army. The very next day, I was induced into the United States Army. I feel today that I am here alive and well, primarily due to the gallant efforts of the Soviet Army. So, in that sense, I feel I owe my life to what happened then in remote Stalingrad.
I think, Emil, that few people realize that had there not been the enormous sacrifices of the Soviet Army, there would be so many more GIs 6 feet under. But, of course, it is not the sacrifices that count, but the losses inflicted on the enemy. Do many people across the ocean know that the Soviet Army routed, destroyed, and captured 3.5 times more enemy divisions than did the Allies? Do many people there know that 3/4 of the Nazi planes, tanks, guns, 3/4, mind you, were destroyed on the Soviet-German front? Somehow this fact is hushed up in the West. And do many people know that out of 100,000 Nazi planes, 77,000 were destroyed on the Soviet-German front? Just recently, we celebrated May 9th, which is Victory Day here in the Soviet Union, and these facts inevitably come to mind.
Mike Daly, Danvers, Massachusetts. What breeds of dogs do you have in the USSR?
You know, our announcer, Olga Bekova, who very often reads your questions on the mailbag, just bought a Cocker Spaniel. And she was talking to her husband on the phone, and I overheard the conversation. She was asking her husband how the doggy was feeling and whether he had fed it. And she was telling him not to forget to walk the dog before he went to bed. So you see, that's a dog story from the North American service. We have plenty of poodles, terriers, Airedales, setters, Great Danes, Borzois, sometimes called the Russian Wolfhound, German Shepherds, Doberman Pinschers, Collies, Russian Shepherds. My friend, or rather neighbor, has a Newfoundland. I feed that dog chocolate and get hell for it from the neighbor. We have some Huskies, Pointers, Foxhounds, Rothaars, and Kurzhaars. Of course, that's only a small list of the various breeds of dogs that we have in this country.
What is the cost of a taxi ride?
We pay what amounts to 54 cents a mile, but Moscow cabbies, you know, are notorious for refusing to go where they don't want to go. But lately, they're getting competition from private car owners who register and then work as cabbies on their own cars. But not many have registered, strange as it may seem. That is, they haven't registered officially. But they work without registering. Lately, it's become ever more difficult to order a cab by phone, incidentally. It's almost impossible. The demand is very great.
Gary Emerson, Golden, Colorado, and Joe Stewart of Ennis, Texas, both thank the USSR for saving the whales in Alaska.
I think the operation to save the whales goes to show that we're all humans wherever we may live, east or west. Love for animals is one of the many traits we all have in common. And when we see such unity and combined effort to save just 2 whales, it makes you think why there isn't more unity in efforts to save our own kind from the danger of wars. And let us hope Mr. Baker's visit will be the continuation of our joint efforts along these lines. I have a feeling that we will continue to work together for a peaceful world. A couple of years ago, on our side of the Bering Strait on the Chukchi Peninsula, 2,000 white whales were chasing a large shoal of Arctic cod, and they got caught in a bay, the outlet from which became frozen solid. They were 12 miles from open water, and the white whales, mind you, weigh about anywhere from a ton to a ton and a half each. People brought a lot of frozen fish to feed the captives that couldn't get out into open water. The whales were finally rescued by the icebreaker Moskva, anchored not far away in Providence Bay. But the animals, strange as it may seem, refused to follow their steel rescuer. So someone remembered that dolphins, their very close relatives, love music. So, attracted by melodies from the icebreaker, the white whales swam out into the Arctic waters.
Terry Helton, Gary, Indiana. A reversal of glasnost and perestroika has me worried. The thought that Mikhail Gorbachev and Eduard Shevardnadze might be removed has me frightened.
I'm afraid you're not the only one that has expressed such views, my good friend. A few people in quite responsible positions, like Mr. Cheney, the Secretary for Defense, said that a hostile leadership may come to power, therefore no cuts in NATO forces. Well, we were told officially that this was his personal view. Let's hope it is. You see, there can be no return to former practices, firstly, because the security bodies are under strict government control today. The democratization of our society is an irreversible process and has taken firm root. It cannot be turned back. Though, of course, bureaucracy, I dare say, is still strong. We are making our courts independent, our prosecutors independent. The media exposes errors of the past and of the present, which is very important. Our parliament is becoming a permanently working democratic body with checks and balances, and not a formal voting machine. Foreign policy issues of home policy, will now be first widely discussed, and only then will a decision be taken. Our National Daily wrote recently that had our prosecutors been independent in the 30s, the bloody terror of the Stalin period may not have taken place. We are separating the legislative, executive, and law enforcement bodies. So you see, all these measures combined rule out completely the repetition of the shameful past, rule out any retreat.
Reverend William Peek, Buffalo Center, Iowa. I'm especially interested in the new policies of Mr. Gorbachev and their impact on the practice of Christian faith in the Soviet Union.
Reverend Peek, I think a sign of the times is the fact that 5 top members of the clergy have been elected to the new Congress of People's Deputies. Could we even think of this a few years ago? Or that Mr. Gorbachev would receive Patriarch Pimen, a member of the Holy Synod of the Russian Orthodox Church? Or that the 1,000th anniversary of Christianity in Russia would be celebrated, of all places, in the Bolshoi Theater in Moscow, and would be telecast nationally? Hundreds of Christian churches and prayer houses have been and are being opened. New churches are being built in many cities. So you see, the whole atmosphere has changed. Hundreds of thousands of Bibles are being printed and have been printed, both at home and abroad. The new law on the freedom of conscience will most probably make it possible for the church to open Sunday schools and visit the faithful in their homes. And generally, this new law will give the believers the status and the rights which are theirs.
Davis Mosier, San Jose, California. What are the penalties for driving under the influence of alcohol in the USSR?
In our country, you are considered intoxicated even if you had only one drink or even a glass of beer in the morning. It does not matter how much alcohol there is in your blood. If caught for the first time, you're fined an equivalent of $170, or your driving license is rescinded for from 1 to 3 years. The same penalties if you refuse to take a breathalyzer test. But if you are caught driving while intoxicated during a year after that, then you had it. You may get a term of up to 1 year, or 25% of your salary is deducted, plus your license is rescinded for 3 to 5 years.
Is this a widespread problem in the Soviet Union?
I'm afraid it is, because one-third of the deaths as a result of road accidents are caused by drunken driving. And two-thirds of road accidents occur on rural roads. Our annual death toll on the roads is only slightly lower than yours. But you have to remember that you have 12 times more cars. So we have to build better roads and stay sober.
That was Joe Adamov answering your questions on Moscow Mailbag. Address your letters to Radio Moscow, Moscow, the USSR. You couldn't do better than write us that letter. Your comments on this show are welcome. Mailbag is on the air every Saturday, Sunday, and Wednesday on the East Coast at 2410 and 0210 UTC, and on the West Coast at 0510 and 0710 UTC. In the 19, 25, 31, and 41 meter bands.
Well, I guess we didn't hear the cheery little music at the end of that. Moscow Mailbag, a regular feature here on Brain Damage every Saturday night from 10 to 12. And a very good evening. This is Eric Corley with you up until midnight. And we did just hear the most recent edition of Radio Moscow's Moscow Mailbag. Tonight, we'll be focusing mostly on China again, since it's such a big story. And for all those of you who don't want to be serious, want to be silly, well, I guess you can watch Saturday night tonight. But we've got more important things to deal with. We've got Brother Bill with us tonight.
Good morning. Or actually, good evening, I'm sorry.
Good evening, yes. You usually come on after midnight, so usually you say good morning.
Right, exactly. But here I am. I'd just like to bid good evening to the listeners and stick with us, because I think it's going to be darn interesting.
Yeah, high exalted guest of honor today and on Brain Damage. Thank you very much for coming by or stopping by early.
No problem.
And
my pleasure, I hope.
Okay. First thing I'm going to do is read a couple of top stories on the news, and then we'll take some phone calls, play some records and tapes and all kinds of fun things like that. And Bill, feel free to just chime in anytime if you've got a comment. Bill's in the far distant studio. I haven't even seen him tonight. I've just heard his voice emanating from some other part of the station.
Yes, indeed. I have a couple of highlights, my own personal viewpoints jotted down here, and I'm sure we can get to them, and hopefully we'll get plenty of calls tonight.
And our telephone number is 632-6901. We do not discriminate on the basis of age, race, or what's that other thing we used to discriminate against? They made us stop.
Creed?
Yeah, creed, right. We were always doing that. We didn't even know it. So, anyone can make a mistake. 632-6901, area code 516. And this is right off the Associated Press teletype machine, which is amazingly working. Official Chinese media are reporting the arrests of hundreds of people as the government continues its crackdown on participants in the country's pro-democracy movement. The arrests come as officials intensify a propaganda campaign blaming counter-revolutionaries for last weekend's clashes in Beijing. Fascinating, if you're following this, the way that Chinese media are presenting it, it's straight out of 1984. The government says about 300 people, mostly soldiers, died in the violence compared to reports that say perhaps thousands of civilians were killed, reports from just about anyone who was there. China's bloody crackdown is generating fear in Hong Kong and Macau, British and Portuguese territories that are to be turned over to China by the end of this century. Thousands of people in both countries have joined demonstrations protesting the violence in China. Dozens of Americans fleeing Beijing arrived in Seattle today. Some brought with them vivid accounts of Chinese students carrying corpses in the streets, vehicles on fire, and frenzied attempts by foreigners to escape the military crackdown. One passenger said, "We felt like refugees." And there's other news, but we're really not going to pay attention to that right now because this is far too enveloping. You know, it's something that once something like this happens, you really can't think of all the other things that are happening. And there are a lot of other things happening. I mean, the Ayatollah dying last week was really quite a trip. Just watching the funeral alone was something.
I was going to say the same thing.
They dropped his body on the ground and all kinds of bizarre things happened.
What, six people died in a like stampede of millions?
At least, I think more people died.
Really?
Because if you saw those crowds, they were just, they were incredible. Incredible. Pounding their head on their hands, you know, in grief and everything like that. But the scene where they were trying to bury him was the most incredible thing. They had to abort the first ceremony and try and get his casket on a helicopter where it almost fell out. Can you imagine that? And the crowd would hold the helicopter down. You know, the helicopter would try to take off, and they would all hold on to whatever those things are called on the helicopter and keep it from taking off. And finally, they got it done. But that's what happens when you have such a popular guy.
To say the least.
I mean, if Reagan had died while in office, the same thing would have happened.
Yeah.
For sure. Now, let's see. Where should we go next? Well, Bill, tell me what you think. I mean, we haven't really talked about this.
Well, I don't know, Eric. I try to think of things in like the big picture at times, and I just can't believe, you know, this China situation is just the major top story of like a whole world that is changing so much so rapidly. It's amazing. It's like we're screaming right into the 90s. You know, it's mm-hmm. like get ready because here we go.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, the one thing that I found, and another thing maybe we should find out tonight is why I feel like this really touches me personally. I don't know why. And there's a million news stories all the time, but this one...
Well, you want to know why?
I couldn't believe when they fired on them. I couldn't believe it.
I'll tell you why you feel affected by this, and I think it's the same reason I feel affected by it. It's because these people that were fired upon were like our friends.
I know.
They're people that that take over administration buildings occasionally. They just have a anti-nuclear rally or something like that. Same mood, same kind of feeling. And I mean, I've got pictures here that were sent to me mm-hmm. of them sitting on the field in their tents, and it just looks so familiar. We've seen it before. And it doesn't matter what they're marching for. The fact that they were marching for democracy was it's fairly important, but that's not the reason why people are outraged. The reason why people are outraged was because a group of unarmed kids, really, and also older people as well, who happened to get in the way, were mercilessly gunned down. It doesn't matter what they were marching for. It's just the fact that happened to them.
I heard one news guy comment that if the government had just issued like an official statement saying, you know, thank you very much for the criticism, we admit that we were wrong, the chances are like none of this would have happened, at least for the moment anyway. What do you think about that?
I don't doubt that at all.
Yeah, of course, it didn't happen that simple, though.
Well, now, in the Times today, they talked about the various leaders, the real leaders. Trying to find the exact. Well, of course, Deng Xiaoping reemerged.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you saw that.
Yes, I did see that. Was that yesterday?
Yeah, they have all this symbolism in the Chinese media. You know, when somebody appears, that means he is in control.
Mm-hmm.
They show a picture of everybody sitting down, and it's the order in which they're seated that determines the order of their power, and you can read a lot into it. This was on Friday. Deng Xiaoping appeared Friday evening on Chinese TV with a group of nine other top officials, apparently resolving the question of who was running the country. Trying to find the interesting part here, where it goes through a list of who is... Oh, here we go. On Mr. Deng, of course, is 84 years old. I believe I'm correct in saying that. Yes, he's 84 years old. He's been rumored to be dead or gravely ill, but obviously he's just fine. On Mr. Deng's immediate left was former President Li Jianyan. Forgive me if I butcher these names. Actually, it's the least they deserve.
I was just going to say, yeah, it's a cute pun.
President Li Jianyan, who is 80 years old. After him, in order, were President, I don't know how many presidents they have, President Yang Shengkun, 82, Peng Zhan, 87,
He was a former head of the National People's Congress. Mr. Wan, who is 73, and Bo Yibo, who is 81, deputy chairman of the Central Advisory Commission. Now, beyond Prime Minister Lee, were Rang Zhen, 81 years old, vice president, Yao Yilin, 72-year-old deputy prime minister, and the youngster in the bunch, Qiu Shi, 65-year-old Politburo member. Now, and also, did I mention Chen Yun, 84-year-old head of the Central Advisory Commission? That's incredible. A group where, if you put Reagan in the middle of it, he would be one of the young ones.
That's true.
I mean, who are these people, these octogenarians, you know, running the country here and telling these young people that they're out of line and shooting them down? Think about it. Think how scary that is. All these senior citizens. I mean, look, old folks, if you're looking for power, apparently China is the place for you. that's where you're really respected in your old age, because that's when you can take a lot of power and gun down all those young punks.
But that's not really. That just proves that they don't have power per se. I mean, I feel that that the students have more power in the fact that they were the victims of the whole thing. And I mean, as far as the whole world looking at them, I just can't believe they even said on their own news programs that no students were killed and they peacefully cleared the square and all this other stuff in their own country on the news. You know, the government run media.
Well, it's. It wouldn't be the first time that things have been altered, that the past has been altered and news reports have been distorted. One only has to read George Orwell to see how that's done, and I'm sure they all have a copy in their offices mm-hmm. as to how to manipulate the news. And it's something that we do here, obviously not to the same extent, but manipulating the media is a very important skill for any government to have. It's just... I think the whole thing is scary because if they're actually successful in bringing across that view to the average people in China, which I don't think they will be, but the mere fact that they're saying these things means that they think there's a good chance they can actually convince people of these lies that they're coming up with. If they were to succeed, then as far as I'm concerned, 1984 is a reality in China.
Yeah.
There's I mean, they're blaming this guy, Feng Lishi, an astrophysicist, China's best-known dissident. Listen to what they say about him. Television news on June 9th named as the real villain in the recent bloodshed, someone whom most people had not even conceived of as a possible culprit. Now, Feng Lishi, he's a leading astrophysicist, China's best-known dissident, had perhaps been overlooked because he does not own a gun, and for weeks has carefully avoided the student encampment on Tiananmen Square, where troops killed hundreds or possibly thousands of civilians early this week. The television news accused Mr. Feng, who is now in the United States Embassy for his own protection, of being a traitor who incited the rebellion and provoked the violence. Actually, that reminds me of Animal Farm. The sharp attack underscored not only the passions that Mr. Feng, who is 53 years old, I guess he's one of those young troublemakers,
yeah,
arouses on both sides of the Pacific, but also the difficulties that the United States and China will have in resolving the latest irritant to their relations. Let's see if I can get to the actual television part. I thought it was in here. Well, I think we understand what they're doing. He incited the students and started this rebellion, and many people died because of this. He fled, but we must not let him escape. We must punish him. And that's what they said on Chinese TV.
And what are they actually blaming this guy for?
They're blaming him for everything, it looks like. It looks like they said many people died because of this. Now, they're acknowledging that many people died.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently this one dissident that many people hadn't even known about, at least not in this particular instance... he is being blamed for the whole thing, which I imagine is quite a boost to his resume, but as far as being truthful, it's far from the truth. So, I don't know, it's that's a pretty ominous sign. Also, Mr. Deng Xiaoping, of course, expressed no remorse for the killing of hundreds, perhaps thousands of civilians, but, and this is what really gets me upset, He led the group in standing for a minute of silence to honor the soldiers who died in the fighting. You know, as if there ever was really any fighting, you know, and you just... I mean, we might as well honor the guy who died while shooting down people in McDonald's in California, you know, because he died too, right?
Yeah, and a massacre.
It's the same brave fight he must have been involved in.
I believe he called it a, quote, triumph, didn't he?
I don't know. This disturbance was something beyond anyone's control, Mr. Dung said. A very small number of people created turmoil, and this eventually developed into a counter-revolutionary rebellion. They are trying to overthrow the Communist Party, topple the socialist system, and subvert the People's Republic of China so as to establish a capitalist republic. He also said, in putting down the counter-revolutionary rebellion, the People's Liberation Army, the armed police, and the public security officers have been conscious of their duties and have overcome the challenge. Now, I'd like to go over to an issue of Beijing Review. A friend of mine over in China somehow managed to find the time to send copies of Beijing Review, and I'm eternally grateful for that. This issue, May 8th through 14th, is when it stated, obviously before any of this really started going crazy. This was before martial law was even declared. But I find it interesting to read right after we look at what Deng Xiaoping said yesterday. Student demos shake Beijing. Okay, officials from both the State Council and Beijing Municipality sat down April 29th with 45 students from 16 colleges to engage in the first dialogue of this kind since the student unrest started a fortnight ago. Their discussions centered around sweeping out corruption, problems in education, objective reporting in the press, as well as current student strikes. Sounds real dangerous to me. By watching the three-hour-long televised dialogue, many Beijing residents were relieved to see the lack of tension in the atmosphere and that views were exchanged candidly and sincerely between the two sides. 2 days before, almost 30,000 Beijing college students holding streamers and banners and shouting slogans took to the streets coming in from every corner of the city to peacefully petition the government after about 60,000 students boycotted classes for 3 days. Now, this is the interesting part, and keep in mind, this is a magazine that is put out by the Chinese government. The demonstrators covered Beijing's major streets, singing the Internationale and shouting slogans. These included, support the Communist Party, support the Constitution, support the four cardinal principles, eliminate corruption, and down with government profiteering. Now, we just read what was in the New York Times today, what Deng Xiaoping said on Chinese television last night. And now we read what the Chinese government said a month ago, saying that these were students that were supporting the system and that were just trying to weed out corruption. How do you figure it?
I don't know. I think that it's obvious that they will just say lies to whenever they feel like it, it seems, or whenever it's convenient for them, or when they think it works for them. But I can't understand how they feel that that will get them anywhere as far as international politics when it's so plain that it's just like, say, one story or one lie right after the other. I don't know. I just don't understand those people or that government or something. It's just...
Well, do you think it's going to... how's the rest of the world going to actually take... I mean, we know how they're taking it now, but how are they going to take it in years to come? What's going to be the long-lasting effect of this?
If what happens, though, it all depends on the results of it, I would say. If things just quiet down or you know, martial law. There might be other world events that that may erupt in other countries that would steer us away from paying attention to what's going on in China.
Mm-hmm. What I'd like to do now is I've got a tape in here that I'd like to play of a short piece from Radio Moscow. Now, don't go crazy. We're not being turned over to the Soviets here. But this is an interesting piece. It's an editorial on the Sino-Soviet relations that, of course, was in the middle of all this when President Gorbachev visited China. The student demonstrations were at their peak, or certainly reaching that stage. So what we'll do here is just take a quick listen to that very short editorial, and then we'll come back here and start taking some phone calls here at 632-6901.
Radio Moscow presents Soviet Viewpoint. Our observer, Vladislav Kozikov, discusses some results of Mikhail Gorbachev's visit to China in the middle of May. The normalization of Soviet-Chinese relations was the number one result of the talks in Beijing. A new page in history has been turned. Fresh opportunities have opened up for broader ties and cooperation in all spheres. This is a major achievement of the two countries, having a common border of 7,500 kilometers. It is also a major factor for a better world situation. It couldn't be otherwise, simply because two countries accounting for a third of the world's population have agreed to build their relations on the principles of mutual respect and peaceful coexistence. Normal relations between the two countries are likely to have the most favorable impact on the situation in Asia and in other parts of the globe. The more so, since both countries have announced that their relations shall by no means be detrimental to relations with other countries. I believe that the full normalization of Soviet-Chinese relations also shows what the new political thinking can do. During Mikhail Gorbachev's talks in Beijing, the Chinese leader Deng Xiaoping remarked, "The idea of a summit had occurred to him after the Soviet leader's speech in Vladivostok. In that speech in 1986, Mikhail Gorbachev put forward a program for peace in Asia and the Pacific, based on a new thinking. It is new approaches to world problems by the Soviet Union and China that have made possible current agreements. One can already see how the situation in the region has been changing. Here is an example. The Soviet Union has begun major troop and arms reductions along the border with China. An agreement has been reached to take joint action to demilitarize the border and to turn it into a border of friendship and cooperation. The day the Soviet leader arrived in Beijing, part of the Soviet troop contingent in Mongolia began to withdraw. So far, three-quarters of the troops deployed there are going to return home. Negotiations will be held with Mongolia on their complete pullout. A settlement in Kampuchea has begun taking shape. Vietnam has announced the intention to withdraw all its troops from that country by the end of September. Talks in Beijing made another contribution to the efforts to solve this problem. That region has many other years-old problems. So far, Asia and the Pacific have nothing similar to the Helsinki process in Europe. There is no mechanism for regular consultations. But why shouldn't the countries of that region, with the help of the United Nations, start an all-Asian process? Mikhail Gorbachev raised that issue during his visit to Beijing. True, there must be efforts by all the countries concerned. In the first place, the Soviet Union and the United States. Incidentally, the talks in Beijing repeatedly touched upon Soviet-American relations and the need for expanding them to improve international relations. In particular, the Soviet and Chinese leaders noted the importance of another Soviet-American disarmament agreement that would reduce strategic offensive arms by half. Commentary was by Radio Moscow's observer, Vladislav Kozyakov. You are listening to Soviet Viewpoint.
Yes, but now you're listening to Brain Damage here in WUSB in Stony Brook, and that was a commentary from the Soviet Union on what were the improving Soviet-Sino relations, or I guess Sino-Soviet is the way to say it, whether those relations are still improving. I don't know, I guess that's up in the air. What do you think?
What was that? That tape was from before the before last Saturday.
That was before the massacre. Yes, mm-hmm. But it was after the summit meeting.
Right.
So he did make mention of the students, and actually the Soviets had been saying that it was an internal affair, and they didn't want to say anything nasty about what they did to put down the demonstrators. However, in today's paper, I saw a piece: Soviets dismayed by China's actions. The Soviet Union's main spokesman said yesterday the Kremlin was surprised by China's crackdown on pro-democracy demonstrators and that Soviet officials have been unable to reach Beijing. "We can't get through either," Foreign Ministry spokesman Gennady I. Gerasimov said in an interview in Bonn, where he is working to prepare for next week's visit by Soviet President Gorbachev. He said Soviet officials were surprised at the force with which Chinese communist leaders suppressed student demonstrators who have been rallying peacefully for weeks
in support of broader reforms. Thousands of protesters were reported killed by troops acting on orders from Chinese hardliners led by the conservative premier Li Peng. Asked if he was surprised by the brutality of the crackdown on the Chinese protests, Gerasimov said, "We hadn't expected this." He said Soviet authorities were extremely dismayed by Beijing's actions.
Which seems to be the general reaction.
That's true. That's true. And it was a long time coming from the Soviet Union, and I'm glad they finally said something about it, because it was troubling that they wouldn't condemn that kind of atrocity.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you think of what President Bush said? Do you think he's doing enough? Do you think he could be stronger?
Well, I had heard that the United States wasn't really helping the Americans get out of the country.
Mm-hmm.
And I also understand that other countries sent in planes to pick up their people to take them out of there, and the United States didn't do anything like that. I heard some criticisms by the people who finally made it back here, but...
Well, you know, in a time like that, it's going to be crazy no matter
right.
what country you're dealing with. And from what I've heard, everybody that wants to get out of China is out of China now,
mm-hmm.
Except the Chinese, of course.
Right.
So, you know, that's... I can understand the criticism there, but I don't think that's really the main issue here. The main issue is, what about all those people there, you know?
Right.
I mean, there are people there that have the same beliefs that we're familiar with. They just want fairness. They don't, you know, they don't want anything, you know, unfair, I guess is the best way to say that. And their lives are in danger now. They're being arrested right now at this very moment as we speak.
Right, they're in hiding.
They're in hiding. There's a crackdown going on. They're looking for the leaders, and it's a reign of terror. It really is. It's Sunday afternoon now in China, and it's I can understand what President Bush says when he says that you can't cut off everything and expect it to solve problems. You know,
mm-hmm.
you don't want to cut off the entire relationship that we've worked so hard at to achieve in China. But at the same time, I think there's more that we as people can do, you know, because we don't have the same concerns that the government has. The government is different from the people.
They're trying to keep... So something from New York City, where there were many different types of people were protesting in Chinatown. I think that was Friday. But what can we do besides that? Or what actually can we do that would actually change the situation over there? I mean, or what can President Bush do? I don't really think that he's going to be sending in any troops or anything like that. I mean, although that I wouldn't be surprised if that was to happen.
Well, you know, no, he couldn't do that.
No.
I mean, where's he going to send them? Are we going to invade China?
I know, that's the thing. This isn't Central America or, you know, something, some small power struggle. This is like the most populous nation on the planet.
What I'd like to know is, something that was sort of bothering me. How come Bush doesn't have the same viewpoint towards a country like Panama? You know, obviously what's going on there is bad, but for some reason, you know, he doesn't stop at anything to get Noriega out.
I know, that's interesting. I don't know. I have no idea. I always question why these government leaders do what they do.
I mean, that's an internal matter too.
What's
going on
is.
There? You know, oppression of citizens. For some reason, though, we seem to be able to. I know we have a base there with the canal zone, but.
Mm-hmm. And also, that's another story that's been completely left in the dust by the media. With the whole China incident that's happened, the Panama incident has been relatively ignored as far as mass media goes.
Mm-hmm. Also, it brings to light another point. We see all these people getting killed in China. We see thousands of people being massacred, and the world reacts, but it's nothing new. You know, it's nothing unique to this time period. I mean, at this very moment, the same thing, similar things are happening or have happened recently in other countries. I mean, look at Iran, look at South Africa, look at the oppression going on in places like that. Why isn't there as much of an outcry at one time like there is here? And do you know what the reason is? Because we saw it.
Right.
We had cameras. The media spread
exactly.
it all throughout the world. And if every country was under surveillance like that, then you would see a lot more outcry. You would have seen a lot more outcry about the turmoil that happened in Iran. But we didn't have cameras there. We weren't allowed to see what was happening on the street. It was too dangerous. Same thing in Lebanon. Same thing anywhere that, you know, that craziness is reigning.
But why don't we have cameras there?
Well, South Africa, for instance, there's been a state of emergency now for, what, 3 years?
Mm-hmm.
Censorship. You can't broadcast certain things unless they're reviewed very carefully. Same thing in the Palestinian zone.
But isn't it the same situation in China right now, in that they had the they made them made all of the news media turn off their satellite dishes?
Right, no live feeds, but for
right.
some reason
they're
everybody is able. They're able to film. And,
are they smuggling videotape out of the country? Or?
I don't know if they even have to do that.
Mm-hmm.
It's they haven't been clamping down on the press as much as people thought they would.
Yeah.
It's still very dangerous, and one of the things broadcast on Chinese television told that you could get shot for taking pictures or
mm-hmm.
using binoculars.
Well, there was those two guys from CBS who were
detained for 19
right.
hours. Right. So it's risky. It's a risky business, but you know that when you go into it.
So we're asking a lot of questions here on Brain Damage tonight, but we want to maybe some of the listeners have some answers.
Yes, if there are any listeners left, if we haven't been too serious here and driven them all away, 632-6901. All of our lines are open, or maybe they're broken or something.
We want you to share your...
Hit on the side there.
Yeah, there you go. We want to want you to share your viewpoints here at WUSB. 632-6901. Let us know what you think about the entire situation.
Area code 516. Now, you've got a tape in there, Bill.
Yes, I do.
This tape just came from China, and it reveals absolutely nothing about what's going on right now. But I just wanted to play a couple of seconds of it so that you could hear that for yourself. This is from Radio Beijing, and this is the kind of thing that if you were in China right now and were understood Chinese, you would hear this in Chinese. We're going to hear it in English. This is probably the kind of subject matter that is front page headlines in the government view. Go ahead, Bill.
A coal deposit with estimated reserves of 10 billion tons was discovered recently in China's northwestern Shanxi province. Our Shanxi correspondent reports that the latest discovery brings the total coal deposits in the province to about 900 billion tons. Radio Beijing's Liu Hui has the details.
The manager of the Shanxi Geological Prospecting Company, Liu Wenzhong, says the latest discovery was made by a survey team which has been conducting large-scale exploration work in the province for several years. Wang Chaoyu says that the deposit, which is estimated to have reserves of 10 billion tons, is known as the Yonglong Coal Belt.
This is a public service announcement.
Murder is a crime. Let's go down.
The Clash, Know Your Rights. Unless you're dumb enough to actually try it. Yeah, I think can't think of better words to describe what has been going on in that particular corner of the world. And on May 20th, from Beijing Review, the magazine put out by the Chinese government, this was before the massacre and after martial law was imposed. On May 20th, top Chinese leaders went to the hospital to see students suffering from the effects of fasting. During their conversations, one student said, "The Chinese Communist Party needs to rebuild its prestige, and China must revive its national spirit." Saying he was a representative of the students, the young man told visiting members of the Politburo of the Central Committee of the Communist Party of China, Hu Qili and Qiu Shi, that China is facing four problems: its enormous population, its shortage of raw materials, its poor economic foundation, and the educational level of its people. No matter who is in power, these four problems are difficult to solve at once, and only under the leadership of the Chinese Communist Party can we solve them, the student said. He went on to say it's certainly a minority, not the majority of the party members who have resulted in the party's corruption. It is very important for the party to rebuild its prestige among the people. What prestige? The prestige that the party should have if it is to be still full of hope. As long as the party has hope, China has hope. The student told the leaders that recently people generally see no hope at all, which has resulted in four divisions among the students in colleges and universities: those who indulge themselves in playing mahjong, those who are busy preparing for the English test to permit them to study abroad, those who spend most of their time at dancing parties, and those who embark on merrymaking trips. "I think China should rebuild its national spirit and bring back people's confidence," he said. When asked if they agreed with what the students said, Hu and Chow responded by nodding. And that was based on a television report and reported in Beijing Review.
A government-run magazine.
Yes, put out by the government, and quite interesting. In fact, let me read a letter to sort of indicate how this magazine... I don't know how this magazine is right now, and I'm dying to get the latest issue of it, and probably be a couple of weeks before I'm able to do that. This is a letter to the editor entitled "More Coverage About Students." It's from Dick Van Wee of San Francisco, United States, obviously. "It was with great interest that I read the last few issues of Beijing Review. As a journalist for more than 20 years, I was curious about your coverage of the recent student demonstrations following the death of Hu Yaobang. As you may have guessed, I was quite disappointed. Please understand, this is not being written from the point of view that we have all of the answers here in the U.S. On the contrary, we're all too aware of the problems of modern American society. So is the rest of the world, and that's exactly my point. Our shortcomings are aired nightly on television news and daily in newspapers and magazines. I guess our philosophy is that recognition and admission of those problems represent the first steps towards correcting them. I understand that as a publication of the government, Beijing Review has a responsibility to present the government's view on the important events of our time. In fact, that's one reason I enjoy reading it every week. It affords those of us thousands of miles away with the opportunity to stay in touch with contemporary Chinese policy. But at the same time, to present that government position as the only voice in China today, I think, does a serious disservice to the millions of other voices that deserve to be heard. Your issue number 18 was particularly curious. Your report on the memorial service for Hu Yaobang noted that the proceedings were broadcast through loudspeakers to some 100,000 students and others gathered on Tiananmen Square. After reading that, I looked eagerly for an accompanying article that might explain in greater depth the circumstances surrounding the students' and others' appearance in the square. Instead, I got an editorial of the People's Daily urging people to take a firm stand against public disturbances. In light of the great strides China has made recently to open up the business of government to public scrutiny, I was very disappointed in the coverage given to the events leading up to May 4th. I can only hope that future issues of Beijing Review will explore public dissent in a more balanced fashion. I had the extreme pleasure to wander into the English Corner at Purple Bamboo Park last summer. I spoke with hundreds of eager students on a beautiful Sunday morning. I found them delightful, concerned, and above all, highly patriotic. I think it's that same concern and patriotism that led thousands into the streets of Beijing in late April and early May. But by choosing to focus on the legal aspects of the demonstrations, you also chose to ignore the substance of their complaints. These young adults of China's future, From my discussions last summer, it was obvious that they're anxious to find a Chinese solution to the problems facing their country. If the government will listen to their voices and find a way to work with them, I'm sure China's future will be in good hands. Certainly they don't have all of the answers. But if you can find a way to harness their energy, they will help find the solutions. I certainly didn't mean this letter to sound like a lecture. It's just that I saw what happened in the United States during our own turbulent 60s, and I think there must be a better way of handling it than we did. I saw a television report on the demonstrations and was deeply touched when I saw one student pasting up a poster that started with the phrase, "I have a dream." The U.S. certainly does not have a very good record in bringing Dr. King's dream closer to reality. Obviously, we both have some distance to go. And again, that letter from Dick Van Wee of San Francisco. And the editorial board responded saying, "Thank you very much for your comments. We are trying our best to improve our coverage of the student movement, as you may have noticed in this issue." And yes, indeed, in this particular issue, the cover story, "Hunger Strike Shakes the Nation," all about what's happening, what was happening with the student demonstrations. In fact, one particularly moving piece, report from the hospital, a piece on some of the hunger strikers. I'll read a little bit of it. And again, our telephone number is 632-6901. We have one caller on the line, but we want more. We have about three calls, and we'll go to the phone. 632-6901, area code 516. Bill, maybe you want to say the number.
Yeah, 632-6901. Share your viewpoints with us here on brain damage here at WUSB Stony Brook. Give us a call.
Yes. Now, this is from Beijing Review, the most recent edition that we have, May 29th to June 4th. "Lying in a temporary ward at Peking," which is another way of saying Beijing, "Peking Union Hospital, Ho Kang, one of the hunger strikers from Tiananmen Square, said he had written down his thoughts a couple of days before. 'I knew my mother would be heartbroken if I died, but it was not my fault,' said the 23-year-old man. 'So I must tell her, we are not wrong.' Hao, who swore he would either live with democracy or die for it, said he believed that if he died, his death would awaken his parents and others. Hao is a senior in the Mechanical Engineering Department of Beijing Theoretical and Engineering University. He has a younger brother, and both his parents work in a county hospital near Xi'an, capital of Shanxi Province. Hao joined the hunger strike on May 13th and was sent to the hospital in the early morning hours of May 19th. The hospital ward was in fact part of a corridor separated from the hallway by curtains, and Hao's bed was just a mattress on the floor. But the patients were receiving first-rate medical care there at one of China's best hospitals. Hao was one of the first 15 students from his university to join the hunger strike. The group included two women. The second day, the number of hunger strikers from the school had increased to 180, according to Hao. 'We went to Tiananmen Square without letting the school leaders know,' said Hao, 'because they didn't support us. The next day, when the water we had brought with us was finished, we felt gloomy. We didn't have a single drop of water between May 14th and the morning of May 15th. Hao recounted that the most stirring and tragic moment for the group was when they heard that the government would forcibly clear the square at 3 a.m. on May 15th because of Gorbachev's impending visit. They said they would not take any responsibility if anything happened. 'I wrote my last letter to my mother because I didn't expect to leave there alive,' Hao said. But the next afternoon, our teachers came. When we saw the flag of our school and the huge poster our teachers were carrying to express their support for us, we all cried. We saw hope. In the next 2 days, millions of Beijing people and students from all over the country expressed their support for us. We knew we would not die, and it seemed to be the dawn of victory." Hao stopped speaking suddenly, and his eyes dimmed. "But up until now," he said, "we have not yet found a door to victory. Our delegation for dialogue with the government has been waiting, first in front of the Great Hall of the People, and then at Jinhao Gate, the front gate of the office of the State Council. But nobody cared, and the door for dialogue is still closed. That's why we're still having the hunger strike." On May 16th, according to Hao, when there was still no sign of hope for dialogue, a group of people decided to separate themselves from the hunger strikers and to start a thirst strike, refusing to take either food or water. The following day, more than a dozen people registered as volunteers to burn themselves. It was only because of strong opposition by the Union of the Universities that they changed their minds. Hao said he is afraid that those who want to burn themselves will decide once again to do it if the government maintains its cold attitude toward the students. Again, we're reading from Beijing Review, a publication of the government of the People's Republic of China, and this came out very shortly before the massacre last week. Hao said he understands the effects that fasting might have on his body. I had never missed a meal before, and I knew the result might be dangerous, he said. But there was no other way because the government had turned a cold shoulder toward our other activities, including the demonstrations, the sit-ins, and the student strike. I just wanted to show that we are not wrong. He said that he received a letter about May 1st from his mother, which said only that society is in disorder, you should not be involved. Nevertheless, he said he still worried that people outside Beijing didn't know what was really happening. They may think we're really doing something wrong, such as beating people, looting, or smashing, because the media have all been under government control and there have been no objective reports about the matter. Hao said he has received medical care in the hospital, but he refused to eat because the goal had not yet been reached. Only if our two conditions are met will we stop our hunger strike. First, a People's Daily editorial declaring that the students' activities are a patriotic and democratic movement. And second, that the government agreed to hold a dialogue with the student representatives. He said he still remembers what happened to the 1986 student demonstrators. Because of unfair reports by the media, he said, the students were criticized and wronged by the whole society. That's why we put freedom of the press as the third of our seven demands, he said. We know there will be a long process before a democratization can be realized in China, but as long as there is freedom of the press, democracy will be pushed forward. Something we could certainly learn in this country. Hao said that because of the opaque nature of Chinese politics, he did not know what was happening in the central government. But he said he believed there must be some good-hearted people in the government. We don't want our movement to be used by anybody, he said. What we oppose is a one-man dictatorship, and we don't want a new dictator of the same kind to take his place when the old falls. And actually, it goes on quite a bit longer with a couple of other portraits, similar portraits of other students that were in the hunger strike ward. But, Bill, I think that demonstrates that if we hadn't known what happened last Sunday, it would certainly seem as if this country was on the verge of covering this in a really fair and open manner.
I was just going to say the same thing. It's so surprising to me that this is a government-run magazine they seem to even support the students just by publishing and informing people on what was going on with seven demands and everything like that. But mm-hmm. I don't know. It just maybe bolsters the possibility of like who is in charge in China. It's still a confusing matter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, what is going to be the reaction now? Because obviously, up until the massacre, the students were being presented in a fairly positive light, even in Chinese press.
Mm-hmm.
And now what's going to happen? Is everybody suddenly expected to suddenly say, oh, they weren't nice people, they deserve to be killed?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anyone's going to fall for that.
And what if you were there? What if you were one of the students and you were reading the Beijing Review? And, I wouldn't even think that the government, nonetheless, they didn't criticize them. Or I wouldn't expect to send troops in or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's just another example of the government misleading just about everybody.
It's amazing. And
which would kind of maybe set them up for a massacre.
Well, it seems like a desperate attempt by the old men that we referred to mm-hmm. earlier to use the old tactics, and try to somehow salvage their dignity through that.
Well, yeah, maybe they were just trying to, if they were supporting them somewhat, maybe they thought they would just go away or something like that. I don't know.
I couldn't believe it when it happened. You know, even now, a week later, I still, after looking at all this, it seems unbelievable that would happen. It seems like the last thing they would have done.
I know. Which means, like, to me, who decided it? Who gave the orders or whatever? And from what I understand, I have a friend who he has his roots in Taiwan,
mm-hmm.
and from what he told me, the Taiwan people they had fled China when the communists had taken over, and then they so they're still technically they're Chinese, but they've started their own country. This was quite a while ago. And he had told me that in China, you're only allowed to have one child in your family there.
That's true.
So all of these students that are being killed are, you know, they're only the only children of the parents, which
that's,
is
that's something
which is even, you know, which heightens the you know, the terror and the horribleness of the government's actions. Because obviously it's a government rule that you can't have more than one child. And from what I understand is if you do have more than one child, they will terminate it or whatever.
They will, I don't know if they actually force you to have an abortion, but you're certainly given enough enough public pressure to get one.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it does seem like a cruel thing to do. But then again, look at what we're doing to the planet. Look at how many people are there. And, you know, a lot of folks are saying, well, you know, this is China. It doesn't really concern us. But, you know, Chinese people take up about 25% of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And one out of every four, maybe one out of every five people in the world lives in China.
Right. And it's the same
thing
to say that the rainforest doesn't affect us and the ozone layer doesn't affect us. And it eventually will come around to us in one way or another that, you know, you send shockwaves through one country in the world and then we'll definitely, you know, catch some of those eventually, you know.
Mm-hmm. Our number is 632-6901.
One thing I wanted to...
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I guess we're going to go to the phones, but quickly, I guess. I wanted to know what your opinion was as far as the future goes. And this obviously could go one of two ways. Either a violent overthrow, which seems to be, if there's ever going to be a democracy in China, it's definitely going to be acquired through violence. It certainly seems that way anyway. Or maybe the government will give in to some of the demands, I don't know, or perhaps there are inner dealings within the government that are going on right now.
Well,
what do you think would be the outcome of this, let's say a year from now or something?
I don't know, about a year from now. Right now, China, it's a very big country, a very powerful country, one of the most powerful countries in the world. You can't just overthrow it like, you know, the Philippines were overthrown.
Right.
This is something much bigger, much more complicated. I don't think we can expect negotiations to take place now. What has happened is a shock.
Mm-hmm.
And what the Chinese government has done is really put itself in a much worse position than any of the students ever could have done, because now, in addition to all of the complaints that the students had, which seem trivial now in comparison,
mm-hmm. That's correct.
Corruption in government, now they have to deal with genocide.
That's right.
That's no less word for it. That's
so
what it is.
Right. So the student demonstrations actually helped the whole world to see what the government at the in China.
Yeah, the massacre was bad enough, but having to read the New York Times today and see people being complimented for it.
Yeah.
And no remorse for any of the people that died, and congratulations for the soldiers, and a moment of silence for the ones that somehow got killed.
Mm-hmm.
There's a picture here on the front page of all these people shaking each other's hands and grinning and stuff.
Yeah, I saw that yesterday. They're all.
How can they do that? How can they be happy?
I don't know.
I don't understand.
The entire nation is furious at their government. And from what I understand, even before violence on Saturday or last Saturday, that person that I know who was Taiwanese told me that 95% of the population hates the government in China. So that's another interesting statistic as far as the outcome of all this.
I chalk it up to 98 now.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's definitely inched up a few percentage points.
So it's really a question of a country where it's the people versus the government. Now, you have these octogenarians running the place, and you have all these other people that don't want them to run the place. What kind of a system is that?
Right.
That's insane. And, you know, I was thinking about this the other day. You have these teenagers, these young people. Who is to say that it's not their country, their future, their right to decide how it's going to be run? You have these people in their 80s. That decided this a long time ago, and they expect everybody to follow in their footsteps and do exactly what they have decided. Now,
and keep your mouth shut.
Why can't the new people have that same opportunity? You know, learn from the mistakes. But
exactly.
Why can't they shape the country? Why do they have to do exactly what they're told by these old people that are not in touch with the true feelings of the country? Obviously, they're not in touch.
And they're probably just thinking of, like, saying their own convenience or whatever, but I just don't understand the political power. It's all I've been saying all night is I don't understand this, but my brain is kind of in shock, especially when I try to actually think about some sort of a resolution within my mind. It just is very far from it. But
I don't see any easy resolution here. I mean, I think the only thing that we can do, obviously, the government. I don't know if the government can do any more. I really don't.
What can they gain, though, by silencing the students? I just don't understand that. Whereas they could probably gain something, if it's like just a new idea, just all they wanted was a voice. They wanted dialogue between them and the government. Mm-hmm. That's one of the demands. But I can't see how that's unreasonable.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, 632-6901, share your viewpoints with us.
Okay, Bill, you're going to have to come into this studio now so that you can hear the phone calls.
No problem.
And it's 17 minutes after 11 o'clock. Our telephone number is 632-6901, area code 516. If there are people out there who have opinions or anything like that, feel free to voice them. And I'm thinking now that you won't have any headphones, will you?
I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah, that really stinks.
What about the booth?
Except then they won't be able to hear you. You're just as bad as in the other studio. I don't know if there are any headphones around that you can use. You see any?
I'm looking. We'll go into the calls and...
Okay, we'll go into the calls
I'll
and...
I'll do something.
We'll figure it out. Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
Hello? Can you hear me?
Just barely. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Central Iceland.
Well, you've got a really poor connection, but try to speak up.
Okay. I'm playing cards with my friend Debbie and Larry.
Uh-huh.
And we're listening about the Chinese thing there.
Uh-huh.
We're playing with Eddie, Kathy, and everybody's here.
Okay, that's good.
Vicky's here. But China, it's a real shame that people can't get democracy, even though they all got run over by, like, tanks and things.
Uh-huh.
Do you think they'll ever get anything like that?
Well, that's part of, that's sort of what we're discussing here tonight, whether they will achieve what they, they now have a lot of other things to contend with. It's not as simple as it was before.
I was listening last week, and a guy said it was just going to be business as usual, because nothing's going to change. Did you think nothing's going to change?
I don't see how nothing can change. It's nobody can really guess where it's going to go at this point. I think, if we're shocked here, they're certainly shocked and afraid there. So in a stage like that, nobody really knows what's going to happen next.
But when the tank runs over you, you really get shocked.
Yeah.
And I'd be afraid of it. In this country, we don't have any even if they chase the people with tanks, where would they park the tanks in New York City? There's no room to park.
Yeah, well, I don't think they're worried about that. It's new territory for me, anyway. So as far as where it's going to go next, that's something I really can't answer.
There's something that's troubling me.
Uh-huh. Well, where do you think it's going to go next?
Well, I'm not really that concerned about that, but is Peking Beijing, or is Beijing Peking?
Well, Peking is still used by the British. That's how they say it, and we say Beijing.
Oh, that's what you always see on the map.
Yeah, well, it used to be Peking for us, too, but then we started a new way of saying Chinese words about a decade ago.
Yeah, it's like the Japanese or the Nipponese.
Yeah, well, something like that. Anyway, thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Okay, let's see if anything is wrong with the phone here. Hold on, I suspect maybe there is. Yes, there's something wrong with our telephone. We don't know what is wrong with our telephone, but... obviously, we're going to have to fix that. Well, I'll tell you what. While we're fixing that, let's play a song that maybe is appropriate for this whole thing. Our number is 632-6901. Why don't you give us a call, and hopefully we'll have the phones fixed as soon as this is over.
When I find myself in times of trouble, Mother Mary comes to me, speaking words of wisdom, let it be. And in my hour of darkness, she is standing right in front of me, speaking words of wisdom, let it be. Let it be, let it be, whisper words of wisdom, let it be. And when the broken-hearted people living in the world agree, there will be an answer, let it be. For though they may be parted, there is still a chance that they will see.
Somehow that song takes on new meaning in a time like this. The Beatles, Let It Be. Our phone number is 632-6901. And I believe we found what the problem was with the board. And believe me, folks, I've never done a show like this before. I've taken the entire board apart. It is in pieces in front of me. And that's the only way we can do things right now because... We need a soldering gun to fix what's wrong with the thing here, so I have to physically hold the wire while we're taking the phone calls with my hand deep inside the mixing board here. And hopefully that will work and we can take your phone calls. It's just, you know, risk of electrocution is just some of the things we do to take calls around here. So please,
it's the least we could do.
Call up. I mean, maybe I'll get electrocuted during your call and it'll be something that you can carry with you for the rest of your life.
So keep in mind that there's quite a bit of effort involved with your phone calls this evening.
That's right. And if I sound kind of clumsy, it's because nothing is where it's supposed to be right now. The dials are inverted. And okay, what we're going to try to do now is take a phone call under this new improved system. 632-6901. Let us know what you think about the China situation and what we as people can do and what the president is doing and what the...
possible outcome might be?
Yeah, I'd like to know that myself. 632-6901. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
It's Anna Goldberger.
Hi, how are you?
Hi. I called a little late. I just got home.
You just got home. Where were you?
Well, I was out.
Out, huh?
Yeah, at the movies.
Oh, I see. Well, that's good, I guess. Did you call last week?
What?
Did you call last week?
I think so. I'm pretty sure.
If you did, you would have talked about the China thing, right? Did you do that?
No.
Okay, well then you'll have to do that now.
Yeah, I was... No, I listened for like a half hour. And I was listening to your program. It's, you know, I think it's interesting. I don't want to be like stereotyping.
Okay.
But the Oriental like type are very, very strict with their children.
Uh-huh.
Now, I heard like stories like they cut off their hand or something when they do something wrong.
No, that's stretching it a bit. I would say it's a cultural difference that perhaps Orientals are bring up their children in a different way. But
yeah.
I think what you're demonstrating here is how something like that can get blown out of proportion.
Yeah, and that's why I think those people were like shaking hands and smiling for the other guy. I don't know who that was. I didn't catch his name, but...
What, you mean Deng Xiaoping and the soldiers?
No, the guy in the booth in the WUSB station.
I'm sorry, I lost you somewhere.
The other guy that was talking before.
Yeah?
Yeah, him.
Me. Okay, what about him?
No, he was... it was either you or him, I don't know. On the front of the... not Wall Street Journal. The New York Times.
Uh-huh. Right. The picture of Deng Xiaoping and the soldiers smiling and shaking their hands and congratulating themselves at the great job they did. Right. I don't think that's because they bring up their children strictly. I think that's just something that's inherent in military situations.
I know. I think that's really horrible. And I am, like, listening. And I can't really understand it because I wasn't there for, like, the beginning. I found out about it like Thursday, and I found out I knew there was something going on in China, but I didn't know what.
You didn't find out about it till Thursday?
Yeah.
That's incredible.
That was the day with George Bush's announcement. Did you talk about that yet?
A little bit, not very much.
I watched some of that, and I found out the phone call that he never got. Through, and that was the first time a president has never gotten through to another.
Well, yeah, it didn't speak well of the White House operators that supposedly can get through anywhere in the world, but very few people can get through to Beijing at this time of the week. Actually, I don't mean to brag or anything, but I did get through to Beijing this week. They just didn't answer the phone, though. And I can't make them answer the phone if I get through, so what we're going to try to do now, thanks for calling, Andrew. What we're going to try to do now, we'll take a couple more calls first, then we'll actually try to call Beijing Review. What is that? Oh, I just want to detect where that loud hiss is coming from. Oh, I was afraid of that. Okay, there's still something wrong here.
Some of it is, some of the hiss is from me. Well, not me personally, but...
Okay, well, let's see. Well, let me just turn you down for a minute. And, okay, I guess that's not so bad. Okay, There's not too much hiss here. You got kind of a roar, too.
Yeah, the hum. Yeah, I don't know where that's coming from.
That's coming from the air conditioner.
It's off.
That's probably the lighting.
The lighting?
Well, what's left of it?
All right, we're going to work on...
Did you have dinner tonight? Is maybe your stomach?
No, actually, we don't want to get into that.
Okay, no, we certainly don't. 632-6901, area code 516. Please give us your opinions, What we're asking you to do is call us and speak your mind. Now,
exactly.
Other parts of the world, people are dying for that very right.
And we are asking you to do that. Not that we're government officials or anything like that.
No, we're not. And that's a good thing, too. It's just, I say this a lot. I don't really mean to sound embittered, but Americans take too much for granted. And rather than come off as an entire race of people that don't really care about the rest of the world and take all their advantages for granted and just, watch TV all the time. I'd just like to see that change a little bit,
Oh, I think...
Am I being too harsh?
No, I think that it's destined to change because of possibly future world events. I mean, we are the highest debtor nation, and I think we're fairly spoiled here in America, obviously, and... Who knows what could possibly happen in the future that people actually have to maybe, fight to survive. Who the heck knows?
Uh-huh. That's right. Almost 1 million people went to Washington a couple of months ago for the anti... No, I'm sorry. I keep getting it wrong. Anti... Well, pro-choice rally, but what is it, anti-right to lifers? I don't like to say that. Anti-whatever those people are. They went there for that rally, and, you know, it was a great thing. People went to express their opinion, and we just take it for granted. It was the same thing, you know. It was the same kind of people. It was the same spirit, the same springtime weather that was in Beijing. And for that, they got mowed down. I think it's not something distant. It's something a lot closer than we think, because these are fellow human beings we're talking about, and fellow thoughts that we all think about. So let's see what's on your mind. 632-6901. Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, it's me, Sammy. How are you?
Hi, Sammy. How are you?
I thought you were mad at me last week. You hung up on me or something. Put me on a hold.
I might have transferred you somewhere.
Yeah, well, sometimes you're still talking about China.
We certainly are, yes.
The estimate of the people who was killed is all kind of a crazy estimate. They go from, you know, there's only two of them dead to there's at least 10,000 dead. Now, which one do you think is true?
Well, I don't think anything that we can read in the Chinese media is
true. I can't
read
Chinese.
You see it rebroadcast on the evening news. What they are saying, I believe, is that nobody died except some soldiers who were killed by rampaging mobs.
Now,
we know that not to be true because we've seen it on TV. We've seen people actually getting shot and dying, and we've seen the bodies being carried away, and there's the countless witnesses, and it can't all be a conspiracy, you know. So, obviously, there's some manipulation going on here.
And my friend, he always says that my friend Kevin, he's on a boat. You know, he's an electrical engineer, and he said to always listen to the BBC. BBC, they estimate something like 8,000 people died.
Well, the BBC is a very good source for
news.
That's
why he said that. He knows what he's talking about.
Well, your friend is very wise in listening to the BBC. In fact, we played something.
He can't listen to nothing else. He's stuck on like a naval boat. It's a sub chase or something.
Well, that's not important. But we listened to the BBC last week, their coverage of the still unfolding events back then. And you get a sense of the drama. You get a sense of what's really happening because they report back every hour. And they're right on top of the situation. Plus, they have more of a sense of where everything is. And in America, we don't. You know, we're such a big country, we don't really have that sense. We're wrong to think we don't need it, but we certainly don't have it. Anything else, Sammy?
No. What channel is the BBC, though?
That's kind of tricky. You have to have a shortwave radio.
Because I can't get it on my radio, and I got a big radio.
No, you have to have what's called a shortwave radio, and that receives all the...
I got back problems from my radio.
Go down to a store somewhere and ask for a shortwave radio, and it doesn't even matter how cheap the radio is. You can get one for under $100. Any shortwave radio will pick up the BBC.
Well, I'm going to try that because that sounds like the thing to do.
It certainly is.
If you ain't going to China, you should know what's going on there because it's world current affairs.
Okay, well, Sammy, I want to hear from you in the future after you've listened to the BBC and tell me what you've learned.
Yeah, maybe help my diction.
Maybe it will.
Okay.
All right.
Here he is.
Well, I think
our
audience has proven itself once again.
I was going to say, that's a perfect example of the American whatever ethic.
If we don't get five people on the line right now that are intelligent, we're going to stop taking calls. All right? 632-6901. Now.
Please.
I'm not kidding around anymore because I'm starting to get upset here. 632-6901, area code 516. And we are going to try to call China. We've got a piece here in Beijing Review, a meeting between Li Peng and the student leaders, kind of a dialogue back and forth, which I think is very revealing. And, of course, this happened. We only need one more call to make our quota, so let's get that one in. It could be you. 632-6901, area code 516. Just waiting for that last call to come in. I mean, four calls lit up right away like that. That's nice, but we need that one more.
Well, I heard this week on, I think it was on Pacifica, that the government actually shot up the troops, hours or minutes before they marched into the square with stimulants, because some of the injured soldiers had traces of stimulants in their blood and in their urine. What do you suppose, and also the government told the troops that this was for to prevent disease and infection because of a few thousand students protesting in a square for 3 weeks. Things were getting kind of gamey, from what I understand. But why do you, which would kind of, I don't know, maybe the government would do that to so that they were completely overcharged or
well,
something like
I
that.
Mean. We talked about this last week. Every army has their killing brigade, you know, the people mm-hmm. that they just trained to kill
right.
and nothing else. Every army has one, and that's who they sent in, the 27th Regiment. They were the ones from, I believe, the outer provinces, and they were goons.
They did what they were told.
Right. And once, even when you're a non-killing brigade, once you start killing, it becomes very easy to continue. Ask anyone who's participated. It's something that's hard to explain. So hopefully we won't have to deal with that much further. 632-6901. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Hello?
Yeah?
Yes. I'm trying to order a pizza.
Well, now you have to deal with the dial tone as well. 632-6901. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Shit.
Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
I just wanted to, I don't really know what I want to say yet, but I wanted to say I don't think the American public is as apathetic as you've proven out to be.
Uh-huh. Well, our callers certainly aren't proving any different, but maybe you can help turn the tide a bit. Go ahead.
Well, I've been listening to your show the last 2 weeks on China, and I haven't called. I've been waiting for someone with an expert opinion to voice their views. And I was thinking about something we talked about a couple of weeks ago, that if a problem doesn't hit directly home with Americans, they kind of turn away from it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the problem. I saw when the protests started to begin, we were throwing a democracy party. I thought it was the greatest thing I could ever see. Maybe it was premature of me to say because I haven't that much life experience. But I thought that I saw the people band together and it was a world uprising. And I think this is the biggest insult of what the Chinese government has done now. I think they're taking us for fools. I can't believe the way the Chinese press has done a 180 on us.
Well, now, the Chinese press does follow orders. So if they get the order from on high that they're supposed to report a story in a certain way, they're not crazy. They've seen what happened to the students. They're going to follow orders, and they know if they don't follow orders, somebody will just replace them and will do what they refuse to. So I don't know how many people's views are represented. We could just be dealing with that group of octogenarians that are in power, and once they're toppled, perhaps things will change. Perhaps the real truth will come out.
Now, what has happened with the army fighting the army?
That's died down. I guess the pictures of the government leaders obviously having control dissuaded any army factions that wanted to punish the killers. I don't know. I don't know exactly why it died down, but there's no talk of that anymore.
Is there a chance of civil war?
Well, after the country recuperates, anything is possible, I suppose. Right now, people seem to want to go back to their daily routines.
And the only other question that's been really bothering me since this whole thing has started, I think there has to be a leader emerging from the Chinese students. I haven't seen any one person taking control. This looks like a mass of people.
Well, there is that one dissident that the Chinese press blame for everything. He's not a student. But
he's now in this country also.
No, actually, he's in the embassy in Beijing, mm-hmm. which makes it kind of interesting. Though the Chinese are demanding that we release him. Obviously, we're not going to do that. But that's there's no student leader, and I think there's a good reason for that right now. Why there wasn't one back when things didn't seem so crazy, I don't know. There were several, I guess, and they probably knew who they were over there, but we just don't know who they are over here.
Very good. I just wanted to prove that there are people out here who care, just I don't think that we can do much about it as Americans.
Well, there is a lot you can do. I mean, you can just make sure that you know everything that's happening. You can talk to your friends and make sure they know what's happening. Because, as you've proven, it's important to all of us. It's not just the Chinese people. It's it's something that affects us all, and we have to remain in communication whatever way we have.
Okay.
All right?
All right.
Thanks for calling. Simply because they're an ocean away doesn't mean that it's not next door. Well, Bill, you want to call China now?
Yeah, sure.
Let's give it a try. Now, I should stress that doesn't almost never works, but anything's possible, you know. And I'm sorry for all these loud beeps going over the air, but with the board half apart on the floor, there's no way I can silence them. I'm sorry. So let's see if the call goes through. We tried it a few times last week, and we got all kinds of recordings. But if we do get through, we'll be talking to the offices of Beijing Review, which certainly would be nice. Hey, we got a line. We got a line. Static, but it's been taken away.
Your call cannot be completed at this time in the country you are calling. Please try your call later.
Okay, what sounds like to me was the call was sent to China, and then it got some kind of signal from China to revert it back to an intercept recording here. What do you think?
You want to try it again?
Well, I heard a trunk there. We had a long-distance trunk, and it just kind of cut it away with that little tweep. So let's try it again. I mean, President Bush couldn't get through, but that's no reason for us to give up. Like I said, I did get it to ring once this week, but they didn't answer. All right, we got something there. Yep.
Your call cannot be completed at this time.
Want to try one more time?
We didn't get the static that time.
We didn't get the static, right?
Which would kind of account for the fact that maybe we didn't make the connection.
I don't think we got as far as we got the first time.
Have you tried to call any other numbers besides the magazine?
Actually, last week I was trying to call Radio Beijing, and this week we're trying to call Beijing Review.
And you didn't talk to anybody yet?
So far, no. I talked to somebody while martial law was in effect, but they were all kind of crazy right then. Mm-hmm. They couldn't really talk to me. Nope, unfortunately, we don't seem to have a line there. That's too bad. But we'll keep trying. Our number is 632-6901. Maybe we'll go back to the calls. I don't know. What do you think, Bill?
Well, it's a big choice. There are two of them right now available, and, well, three. But it's up to you, Eric. It's your show. Like I said, the more of the, maybe I shouldn't really pontificate on phone callers right now.
Well, if we have a full switchboard, I'm willing to go back to the calls. Right now we have two lines open. So what I'll do is I'll start reading this interview with Li Peng, and if the lines are completely lit up, then we'll go back to the phones. 632-6901. Now, this is, again, from Beijing Review, the most recent edition that we have. Chinese Premier Li Peng met representatives of the striking students for an hour at the Great Hall of the People around noon on May 18th, the sixth day of the hunger strike. He was accompanied by Li Tiying, member of the Political Bureau and minister in charge of the State Education Commission, Yan Mingfu, well, it doesn't matter who they are, we don't really care about that. Let's listen to, but hear what they said. Li Peng, I am glad to see you. Today we will talk only about one thing, how to get the fasting students out of their present plight. The party and government are deeply concerned and worried about the matter and their health. Let's solve this problem first and other matters can be discussed later. We have no other motives. We are mainly concerned. You are all young, no more than 22 or 23 years of age. My youngest son is older than you. I have three children. None of them engage in official profiteering. To us, you are like our own children. Now, this is Weir Kaixi, a student leader from Beijing Teachers University, and I guess this addresses that caller's question about who the leaders are. Well, this is what they have to say. Premier Li, if we go on like this, it seems we won't have enough time. We should enter substantial talks as soon as possible. Just now you said we would discuss only one thing. But in fact, it was not you who invited us to be here, and rather it was so many people in the Tiananmen Square who asked you to come out and talk with us. So as to how many questions we should discuss, it is for us to decide. Fortunately, our point of view is unanimous. Now, there are many people in the square, You have probably known how many of them have fainted. I think the most important thing is to find a solution. Yesterday we all listened to and read Comrade Zhao Jiang's written speech. Why have no students left the square so far? We believe that it is not enough, far from enough. You know our conditions and the situation on the square. I think I might call you Teacher Li, because you are of such an elderly age, and I feel I might do so. Oh, boy. But the question now is not to persuade us to leave. We really hope to ask students to leave the square. Over there is not such a thing as majority rules. In fact, it is 99.9% of people must obey the will of the 0.1% of the people. If only one hunger striker refused to leave, the other hundreds would never leave the square either. As for our 2 points, we have proposed an earlier rehabilitation and denunciation of the editorial of People's Daily on April 26th. This means that first, we demand the government not only to affirm the movement of students from the positive side, but also to negate from the negative side to the April 26th editorial, which labeled the movement as a turmoil. Up till now, no one has ever said that the student movement is not a turmoil. Besides, the nature of this movement shall be defined. Then we may have several ways. First, we think Comrade Zhao Jiang or Comrade Li Pang had better go to the Tiananmen Square and talk directly with the students there. Secondly, the People's Daily should put out another editorial to negate its editorial on April 26th and to apologize to people all over the country and acknowledge the great significance of the current student movement. Only by this way could we try our best to persuade the students to switch from hunger strike to a sit-in. And then, under such circumstances, we can go on with our effort to solve the problem. We may try our best, but we can't guarantee we can make it. But if this demand cannot be satisfied, it will be hard to predict how things will develop. As for the dialogue, it should be an openly, equal, direct, and sincere one with representatives of the masses of students. The State Council has already said it wants to hold dialogue, but why can't we set these conditions? Here, open means a live television broadcast. This is openness in the real sense. And both Chinese and foreign reporters should be present. As for equal, it means the dialogue should be conducted between leaders who have the decision-making power and genuine student representatives who can influence the student movement and are directly elected by the students. This means direct and equal. During the dialogue, responses such as, "I cannot answer this question," or "This is just my personal view," are unacceptable. One might give such a response if some questions we raise haven't been discussed at meetings of the Politburo, but new meetings should be immediately convened to discuss such questions. We think this is the genuine attitude towards solving problems. Then we heard from Wang Dan, the student leader from Beijing University. "We representatives here actually represent the fasting students in the Tiananmen Square and assume the responsibility for the safety of their lives. So we hope every leader can make known his opinion on the 2 questions we have raised. As initiators and organizers of the hunger strike, we are all worried about our fellow fasting students' lives. I think every leader shares the same concern. Based on such a thinking, we hope the 2 questions can be expounded as soon as possible." And then Zhang Yan, the Beijing University student. "We believe no matter whether the government or other sectors recognize it as a patriotic and democratic movement or not, history will surely do so. But why do we especially urge the government and other sectors to recognize it? It represents the people's wish. They want to see whether the government is really their own government. It is where the question lies. Second, as communist fighters, we are all people who have a conscience and a sense of humanity. To solve problems like these, face-saving and whatever else should be excluded from any consideration. As long as it is a people's government, the people will still support it after it admits its mistakes. Third, we have complaints about Premier Li Peng, not because we have personal grievances against you. We have complaints about you because you are the Premier of the People's Republic." In case you're just tuning in, we're reading the bits of the meeting between Chinese Premier Li Peng and some of the student demonstrators, obviously before the massacre last week. Perhaps there's something in here that that will give some inkling as to what was about to happen or why it happened or anything like that. Next person we heard from was Wang Zhixin, a student from China Political Science and Law University. The slogan of democracy and science has been chanted for 70 years, but it has never been materialized. Today we are chanting the slogan again. I would like to offer another word to the government. When we began our petition on April 22nd, you didn't come out. We have staged a hunger strike from May 13th till now. There is an international practice that any government should respond when a hunger strike has lasted for 7 days. Even such a country like South Africa can comply. One more question. How does the government feel now people from all walks of life, including kindergarten teachers, have joined the demonstration? Wang Chachu, a postgraduate from the Chinese Academy of Social Sciences. I believe that the students are staging a democratic movement of their own accord to gain the rights stipulated by the Constitution. This is the point that I wish to make clear. If it were only patriotic enthusiasm, anything might have happened with such enthusiasm. Otherwise, no one can explain the sober-mindedness, reason, restraint, and good order in this very movement. And finally, Xiao Yang, a Beijing University student. The student movement may have become a people's movement. The students are relatively reasonable, but we cannot ensure that a people's movement can be reasonable. I would like to hear your opinion on how to cope with the situation. And now, the reply from Li Pang to what we just heard from the students. Now, let me make some points. Since you all wish to talk about the substantial question, I first come to a concrete one. I suggest that the National and Beijing Red Cross societies should send all the fasting students safely to the hospitals. I hope that all the other students on the square will support and cooperate with them. This is my concrete suggestion. At the same time, I order that the medical workers in all hospitals in Beijing belonging to the municipality or central government departments should go all out to take care of hunger strikers and assure the absolute safety of their lives. Whatever common points and differences we have, the most important thing is to rescue their lives. In this regard, that was the same person that ordered them to, or was responsible for ordering the massacre only a week or two later. In this regard, the government is duty-bound. Every student on the square should also cooperate for the sake of caring about your fellow students. What I want is not that the fasting students be brought to hospital only after they are critically ill. We must do it now. I have issued directives that all hospitals must try their best to prepare beds and necessary medical equipment for treating the students. The doctors and nurses have been toiling day and night taking care of the students. This morning, Ziyang, Chiu Shi, Chili, and I went to visit some students in the hospitals. Second, neither the government nor the party central committee has ever said that the students are arousing turmoil. We have been affirming the students' patriotic enthusiasm, and many things you've done are right. Many questions you have raised are just the ones that the government hopes to deal with. Frankly speaking, you have actually helped the government to a certain degree in its efforts toward solving these problems. There are some problems which we have long been trying to solve but could not be timely solved because of many obstructions. Students have sharply raised questions about such problems which will help the government remove the obstacles on its way ahead. I think this is positive, but the development of the situation does not depend on your best intention, desirable expectation, and patriotic enthusiasm. In fact, disorder has already appeared in Beijing and it is spreading across the whole country. I didn't mean at all to let the students to bear the blame, that's how it reads. But the actual situation is there. I can tell you that the transportation on the Jingguang railway artery was blocked at Wuhan for 3 hours yesterday. Now many people who have no fixed duty from some cities have come to Beijing in the name of students. Beijing these days is basically in a state of anarchy. I say it again, I have no intention of letting the students be blamed. I hope that you can think about it. What will come out of it if things go on like this? The government of the People's Republic of China is a one that is responsible to the whole nation. We cannot ignore the current situation. We will protect the students' lives, factories, the achievements of socialism, as well as our capital. No matter whether you like this or not, I am glad to have such an opportunity to tell you. Turmoils have happened many times in the Chinese history. At the beginning, many people did not intend to arouse turmoil, but finally it happened. Third, some government functionaries, city residents, workers, even some personnel from some of the state council departments have taken to the street to show their support to the hunger strikers. I hope you won't misunderstand them. They did so out of their concern about you, hoping that your health will not be harmed, but I don't totally approve some of their practices. If their try to persuade you to eat and drink, take care of your health, and then persuade you to leave the square as soon as possible, and later discuss your problems with the government, it will be completely correct. Well, translation here, I think, is a bit off. But quite a number of them are actually encouraging you to keep on striking. I cannot say what is their motivation, but I don't approve of such acts. As premier, I have to explicitly express my attitude. We understand that you have raised two questions. As the premier of the government and a party member, I do not intend to hide my points of view, but I am not going to talk about them today, and I will discuss it at an appropriate time. Moreover, I have almost stated my views. If you insist on quibbling over this issue today, I don't think it is appropriate. If you don't think you students present here can influence your companions on the square, I would like to have you pass on my urgings to the hunger strikers. I hope that they end the hunger strike as soon as possible and receive treatment in hospital earlier. On behalf of the party and the government, I again express cordial solicitude for them and sincerely hope that they will accept this simple but urgent request from the government. And from the student leader, Ware Keshi, very sorry. Just now I passed on a note to you. I want to remind you now that we students wish to resolve the problem from a humanitarianist position. The other problem is that the key to solving the problem lies not in persuading us present here to leave, but in persuading those out in the square to leave. I have made clear the conditions for their leaving. There is only one choice, and this is an objective reality. If one student refuses to leave and continues the hunger strike, it will be extremely difficult for us to guarantee that the others will go. I also want Premier Li Peng and other leaders present here to consider the feasibility of leaving the problem to the Red Cross to handle. I want to repeat again what I have said. Let us stop squabbling and give a quick answer to our demands, because the students are still suffering from hunger in the square. Otherwise, we will say that the government has no sincerity at all, and it is unnecessary for us representatives to sit here any longer. And finally, from Wang Dan, another student leader, if Premier Li thinks that the students' protests will lead to social upheavals, I say, in the name of all the students, that the government should shoulder the blame. And final paragraph from Beijing Review. As they ended the meeting, the officials and student representatives agreed that the talks were only a meeting rather than a dialogue. And I think the very coverage alone in Beijing Review is surprising.
It's incredible.
Yeah, certainly in light of what happened afterwards.
Certainly isn't something that learned from watching the news, the television news media.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know. I guess Beijing Review is available in this country, but
it certainly seems that the massacre came out of the clear blue sky. You know, that's the picture that I've. That's actually what I've learned tonight, is that I thought there was absolutely no dialogue whatsoever. I thought the government wasn't commenting on the presence of the students, just announcing through loudspeakers that you know, warning them to clear the square or whatever like that. But and also, this government-run newspaper actually covering the whole event.
Mm-hmm. That's what made it so surprising to everybody else. It seemed like a new openness. It seemed like everything was being handled in kind of a glasnost type of a way. And all of a sudden, it's as if we were thrown back a couple of decades, you know.
It's baffling. What is really going on? I wonder if we'll ever know what really went on as far as the decision-making process. And
well, you know, it's like when we were talking about the Exxon thing a few weeks ago. It's no longer in the newspapers.
Mm-hmm.
This, believe it or not, will no longer be in the newspapers a lot sooner than we think if we let it be. If we let it fall out of the headlines, and if we stop asking questions and being outraged at what's happened, yes, it will disappear from the newspapers, it will disappear from the radio and from television.
Of course, there'll be something else to sell newspapers and to get ratings on television.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Which is what the motivation is, you know.
So that's pretty much, I guess, a fairly thorough look at what's been going on over there. We just got these copies of Beijing Review, and there are some pictures in here. Obviously, we can't show you those over the radio, but the pictures sort of underline what the articles say. I mean, these people are not shown as a threat in any way. So I guess what we can say is, and why don't we just open up the lines one more time for people who want to have a last comment and implore them to please stick to the subject matter. 632-6901, area code 516. We look at a government publication like Beijing Review. We see that it's saying something completely different than what the government has said. At the very least, you can say that the government does not have a monolithic hold on everything that that is being done in the country. They don't control the magazines as they control the soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
And that spells trouble for an authoritarian regime. They won't be able to control everything if things like this continue. This is a problem for them. Magazines that publish things like this. That's, and if this is being spread to the Chinese people as well, which I imagine it is, a lot of people have read it. A lot of people know what really happened. And they, you know, they know that these were not hooligans in the square that deserved to be shot. So as far as what's going to happen, with that in mind, obviously there's going to be outrage. And the outrage there will take a lot longer to die out than it will here. It will fester for a long time. It will fester for generations if necessary.
And who knows what will be the outcome of that also, this suppressed rage. And, you know, the government saying, you will shut up and you will do what we tell you to do, but you can't stop people from thinking the way they think, you know. And what will be the outcome of that? Like I said, in this country, people will be tuned into something else that's in the news media, some other world event or, you know,
mm-hmm.
whatever it is, and maybe in their personal lives or whatever. I can't believe that someone did not hear about this until last Thursday. That I found very surprising, especially someone, I can safely assume that Andrew is a young man.
Well, believe it or not, he's the exception to the rule. He knows more than most most kids his age.
You know, with the onslaught of television, too, I mean, what, the average American kid watches how many hours of television? How could you have missed this, you know?
Simple, by turning to the dumb channel when the news reports came in, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. It's there's so many, that's what it is. Maybe 10 years ago, you couldn't avoid a story like this because there was only 12 channels to choose from. But now, you got 24 hours of, you know, you don't want to know anything that's going on. That's fine. We have plenty of choices for you.
Yeah, plenty of escapist paths.
Yep.
Well, let's see if we've got any decent phone calls here. Good evening.
Yeah, howdy. I've been trying to get through for half an hour or so.
Oh, well, congratulations. You made it.
Thanks. Listen, you guys are talking about trying to get through to the Chinese authorities. I've been trying to get through to the local authorities. I don't know how familiar you guys are with the West Meadow Beach. Do you know anything about it at all?
Well, I know where it is, and I've been there. It's,
all right. Can you just hold on a minute? I was just going to call my brother to the phone.
Okay.
And I'm on the phone! All right, you know where West Meadow Creek is? It's behind West Meadow Beach. It's like a big wetlands preserve.
Yes.
All right. All along that strip, there are a bunch of little cottages and all. And they've been there for, I don't know, like 20, 30 years.
These are the cottages they want to tear down.
Right. Those, yeah, they've been in litigation for about the last 17 years. And the story is, I don't know, there's a suit pending, and it's been pending for all this time. And the town is trying to evict the people. But the town is still providing garbage collection service. They're still providing water service. They're still collecting the mail and dropping off mail and everything. And, you know, a few years ago, I got interested in this because, you know, I've been on an environmental slant for a while, and it really bothered me. But the town just really has been against what the people want. And supposedly the town is always for creating a giant preserve and closing this area off to boat traffic and everything in general, but they've never really done anything about it. And every time I try to raise an issue, they always, you know, they always turn me to the Suffolk Police or the EPA or the campus DEC.
Well, who do you try to?
I always come up against a brick wall, and it's terrible.
Who do you approach?
Who do I approach? Well, I started with the DEC. They're on campus. They have a big, you know, they have a central building there, and I've been on the runaround since about 2 years, and it's almost pointless. So if you consider what they're confronting in China, confronting the bureaucracy here is impossible on a minor issue.
Uh-huh.
So it's really bothering me, just the way the entire governmental system is structured.
Uh-huh. Well, now, how would you change it?
How would I change it?
Yeah.
Well, okay, this suit has been pending for years. In Europe, I know the way a lawsuit works, or at least in Germany, it's the party that's being sued has the right to, if they win the suit, they have the right to have the other party pay for the entire lawsuit, legal fees, etc. So I think that's the way it should be here. Because obviously those people at West Meadow Beach who are violating or who have been in violation of eviction codes for the last 10 years, and are parking their cars and their boats and et cetera in this wetlands preserve. It's so totally wrong to me.
Uh-huh. Have you sought to express your opinion through local newspapers and things like that?
Well, I've spoken to Steve Engelbert. He's a local legislator, and according to him, there's almost, you know, he's always telling me, you might try that, but there's really no point in it because there's so much political power involved that you're, again, as I said, you're up against the wall.
Well, Steve might have developed some cynicism in his time as county legislator, but I can tell you that it always helps to get the word out to the people. How do you think we stopped the hypermarket from being built here in Setauket? It was
exactly, but
it seemed insurmountable.
There are a lot of people, relatively, but in general, there are so few people who it really affects that people don't care. There's so many other pressing issues. And that's what I just think is wrong with the town, with the county, and with the state in general. There's so many issues that go by the wayside
But don't think about those. Think about your one issue and just concentrate on getting that out. And if you do that, it will make a difference because...
I best into it for such a long time, and I don't know. At least now I'm getting some coverage.
Uh-huh.
Thank God.
Well, I can't promise you how far it'll go, but certainly if you... if you have something printed in various forms of media and continue to call shows and get your word on the air, more people will hear about it. And if more people hear about it, then, you know, you'll either get the support or opposition that you want.
Right.
All right. But thanks for calling.
Yeah.
All right.
Donut.
Okay. I didn't catch his last word there, but Bill?
Yes?
Not much to do with China, I guess, but interesting. It's kind of an interesting parallel, I guess.
I would say, yeah, it's on a microcosmic type of thing there. But I think what, you know, obviously his point was is that you'll see this in any type of government, and it just makes you wonder, like, you know, why close your mind to the people that you govern? Or why you can't even get to talk to somebody about certain issues that bother you. I just don't understand who people in government, what do they gain from being ignorant and being difficult and from a system that maybe needs to be renovated or something like that?
They get home at 5 o'clock. They, you know, it's a pain to have to deal with all these dissatisfied people and address their needs.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, ask the graduate students who camped out here in Stony Brook for a summer 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing. I mean, they were going for less expensive rooms, less roaches and more services. Basically the same kind of outrage, you know, right. Treat us fairly.
And
I don't really know what happened, but I know they stayed there for a while, and they were declared, you know, illegal at one point, and they were arrested at another point, and it was, you know, certainly nothing on the scale of what's happening in China, but, you could draw parallels with the different sides, with authority versus the rebellious protester. You know, it's you have to see the parallels, and then you understand what it's like and what it must feel like, you know,
mm-hmm.
to actually stand up to authority like that. It's
well, that's what this country is all about. You can voice your opinion. That's why I hope that that gentleman out there can indeed change the situation and maybe explore different avenues for change or whatever, like. For example, a station like USB here, I'm sure that if there's an interest enough on a position of a staff member, that there could be a program about it aired and to heighten people's awareness. I was completely unaware of the issue until just 2 minutes ago.
Mm-hmm.
I want to get two new callers, people who have never called this show before. What do you think, though? Is that
oh, it's definitely feasible? Definitely feasible. Definitely feasible. 632-6901. Let us know what you think about the inefficiencies of government in general. Maybe is a definite, you know, an issue here. And also, you know, just I said it again and again and again and again tonight that
and again.
I just can't believe that you know what the. You know, the picture that was painted by the Chinese government before this happened and then what happened. I just, it just baffles me.
Uh-huh.
My simple little mind. I don't know.
Hey, no mind is simple.
Yeah, right, that's true. Try to make one sometimes.
That's right. 632-6901, good evening.
Hi. I just wondering, I missed that whole thing with President Bush. What exactly did he say he was going to do about the students in China?
Well, he expressed his support for their ideals, but as far as going any further than halting military arms shipments to China, he said anything further would be detrimental to their cause and would hurt the fragile relationship that we've built up with China over the past decade or so. So basically he said that he's doing all he can do and that there's really nothing more that he can do, and he doesn't know what's going to happen tomorrow. Only time will tell.
Oh.
that's it in a nutshell.
Oh.
He denounced the...
In a way, he should really stop sending arms if...
Well, he's done that, and I was surprised that we were sending arms. I didn't know we were doing that. And it's horrible to think that our arms probably killed quite a few of those students. Do you think he did enough, though, overall?
No, not at all. I'm pretty unhappy that he's even in office.
Uh-huh. Well, yeah, apart from that,
no, I don't.
What more should he have done?
What more should he have done?
And sanctions, like with South Africa?
Oh, with South Africa, I think something definitely should have been done. I mean, why couldn't we support Bishop Tutu and Nelson Mandela? Come on, those people are fighting for... What rights we have, we should try and help them achieve what we have achieved.
Uh-huh.
Because that's what this whole country is based on.
Well, you know, I hate to say it because when I say it in a crowd of people, they all like bang their heads on the table at the same time. I think it has to do with profits.
Oh, of course it does. That's what the whole...
I hate saying that, but I think it's true.
No, it is. The whole government is so messed up. I mean, those people who sit there in Congress, they don't do anything. They're just... Some of those people have been in there for about, what, like 18? No, not 18. I don't know, about 10 years? They haven't done really anything.
One just died. He was in his 80s. He was there for a good long time.
And then the fact that it's a sad thing to say, but for any normal person to have anything done, you have to be in some kind of a group. You have to say, like, oh, I'm the president of this type of organization, and that's how they really... That's like the only way they'll really actually hear you.
Well, no, but I think that's the way it appears to us, and that's the way it's portrayed. Because if it was portrayed any other way, think of how dangerous it would be. If they said one person can make a big change and really make a big change, you know, not just this individualistic stuff that we you know, that we say all the time in this country, but if it was really pointed out to us that one person can make a dramatic difference in the very shape of the way things are run. It would be chaos. It's true, though. You can make a big difference. You just have to be persistent. You have to know who to talk to and what to say, you know, in what forms of media to express your views. And to get people to agree with you, you know, to get followers and to get people that will march with you.
You have to have something that's really... good that you believe in also, but
that's true. So that always helps if you do, but you know, sometimes even the bad causes work.
I just want to know, what do you think about the kids who beat up, who like raped the jogger in Central Park?
Well, I talked about that a bunch of weeks ago. I still think it's horrible. I still think they should be punished for it.
Nothing new has been heard of. Have you heard anything new about that?
Not really, no. I don't know what, I know the jogger herself was moved, to a rehabilitation center in Connecticut.
Mm-hmm. I heard that.
Yeah, so, she's, I don't know if you could say she's out of the woods, but certainly she's made a lot of progress, and that's, you know, that's good news to hear, and as far as everything else, I just hope they get what they deserve, and they're not out on the streets soon.
Oh,
Well, my friends and I had been planning, when we first heard that, like a small group of us, we were planning to somehow develop a protest if her condition had developed worse, had worsened,
uh-huh.
and nothing had happened to them. I mean, I myself, I would go on a hunger strike if they don't get what I think they deserve, what everyone thinks they deserve.
Well, what do you think they deserve?
Life, or like jail sentence of life, or because they weren't even sorry that they did it.
Uh-huh.
Or even death, if we could go that far.
Uh huh. Well, you know, it's interesting when you give people the choice of the death penalty, or what we're now calling death behind bars, which is life imprisonment. They will choose life imprisonment, death behind bars. I think if you put the word death in there somewhere, they see its appeal. Death behind bars means no chance whatsoever of getting out of jail, and you will die behind bars. Period. And that you know, that's a much more humane way of doing it than killing somebody. And obviously, if you find that somebody is innocent, you can take them out of jail, whereas you can't revive them 20 years after you've killed them. So that's an interesting point.
Mm-hmm.
But I think a lot of people would certainly have protested with you if those people hadn't or don't get any kind of have punishment for what they did. Lisa Sliwa, the wife of the Guardian Angel leader, in a newspaper somewhere said that she favors castration for such people. She said it in rather more poetic words, but I think that's an interesting point.
That's definitely.
I heard someone say that on I think it was Donahue. They had a whole panel of people deciding what should be done,
uh-huh.
like the lawyers for the kids and the lawyer. He was just so. Bringing up how everything was so racial, and how can he sit there and say that how we feel against them is racial if he's saying that their attack was not racial? That's just, you can't do that. The door swings both ways. If
oh yeah, sure.
It's going to be racial, then of course. Well, I don't know. It's just
sure. Most definitely there are racial aspects to it. There's also racial aspects to the reaction to the whole thing, and yeah. It's not fair either way you look at it. And I said before, the community's response, for the most part, has been condemnation of what these people did. I mean, their community did not stand behind them like the Howard Beach community stood behind those people
mm-hmm.
who were responsible for somebody's death, actually. They did not stand behind them and say they were only misunderstood youths. I mean, some people are saying that, yes, but they're in the minority. Most people say they're a blemish on our community and they should be punished. And what more do you want, you know?
Well, I just hope they really get what they deserve.
Well, I don't envy them, let's put it that way.
Okay.
All right, where are you calling from?
Lake Grove.
Lake Grove, well, thanks for calling.
You're welcome.
Then there's always the problem of identifying... through our wonderful legal system of who is guilty and who isn't.
Uh-huh.
I mean, how many kids were there? 15 involved in some way or another?
Yeah, some will get charged with higher crimes, some will get charged
right.
with lesser crimes.
And what if you're just, young children, or not necessarily children, but young people have a tendency to follow the leaders, you know? I mean, there are people who have leadership qualities, good or bad, and they will go along with the crowd. And what if you were just there, standing there? You know, how do you, I don't know, it's just, that's where, in my mind, like, the death penalty is a very questionable issue until you come to a 95% way of determining who deserves, you know, who's responsible for this and who isn't, you know what I mean?
Computers, Bill, that's the answer, computers.
Well,
they have to decide who's guilty and who isn't.
Of course, we all know that already.
Yeah, that's the only fair way to do it, because human beings are just too crazy sometimes.
Yeah. And then it's always a thing of what if you send an innocent person and you kill him, you know, and the state is responsible.
It's happened.
Sure.
It's happened several times.
It's a scary subject.
Right.
So we could go do another two-hour show on the death penalty.
Oh, we would just keep going on and on. Let's try to finish up with these calls here
okay.
that we have, and then we'll call the night or a morning or whatever it is. Good evening.
Hello?
Yes.
Yes. I'd like to know why everyone is so concerned about this China situation. It really doesn't affect this country. It's thousands of miles away. And it's the media is trying to create some mass hysteria among the people, I believe.
Mass hysteria, huh?
Yes.
Well, now, suppose you tell me why it's not important, then.
Well, it doesn't really affect me or many of my friends that I know. I'm getting along just fine. Has not affected me in any way.
Uh-huh.
And I don't see why we should be involved in it.
Okay, well then, what does affect you?
Well, the weather, the Mets game.
How does the Mets game?
Various things, my job.
Uh-huh.
I'm really not concerned with our foreign affairs. I believe we should follow a policy of non-intervention.
How about becoming isolationists?
Well, I believe to a degree that is true. We should do that. Well, that's about all I have to say, but do you agree with me or what?
I don't, but maybe Bill does?
No, I don't at all.
Bill doesn't agree either. I mean, have you listened to the program?
Yes,
well,
I have.
Then you kind of know what we've been saying here. I don't know if you really want us to go through it all again.
Well, I've had many silly calls.
From this radio station, but just because
I
know
feel hysterical at all.
We're just talking, and you know, it's obviously, you know, the fate of the planet doesn't affect you. You know, you are a member of it, and that there are other people just like you that are going through an incredible amount of suffering right now. And would you want other neighboring countries, or you know, to ignore the situation when it's happening here in this country? Which it, you
it's
know,
not, yeah,
who's to
not,
say it's not going to happen?
You see, when other governments pay attention to what's going on in other countries and claim to help the people by sending arms and things like that, that's viewed as interference, and
mm-hmm.
it is interference. It's you know, that government may and usually does have ulterior motives. They want control over that country. They want influence.
Mm-hmm.
They protect their best interest. However, when individual citizens are concerned over what happens to individual citizens in other countries, as we always should be, there's no organized coalition that's trying to get influence. It's just one person's concern for another. One person in China is the same as one person here.
Mm-hmm.
What's happening to those people is what's happening to us, because
we are
the same human beings.
There are people,
same feelings.
There are people in this country that have family in China and have an interest. And, you know, just because of this one person, you know, he thinks that the media is trying to bring it to a level of hysteria because he personally doesn't care about the issue,
uh-huh.
then, you know, what kind of a statement is that? He's, you know, not the only person in this country. You know, another person that I work with who has family in China right now. And, you know, how does it affect him? He's in this country. I mean, you know, there are obviously quite a number of people. You know, just because, yeah, it's oceans away, it's really far away and stuff like that, but there are a lot of people that are linked to it in this country somehow, and you know, being that we are, you know, the home of the brave or whatever, we should pay attention to what's going on in the world. Why should we ignore what's happening in the world? Plus, if I was in the middle of a revolution or something like that, and I found out that, you know, like, you know, very popular country or very influential countries just said, you know, let's not pay any attention to what's going over there because it doesn't affect us. I would feel like, you know, I'm in trouble now because someone, you know, the other countries are turning away from what's happening right here, which would give, you know, which would give the Chinese government absolute free reign of terror to do whatever they want without it being reported to other people on this planet.
During the 1968 Democratic Convention, while the police were beating up the protesters in this country, in Chicago, the chant went up, "The whole world's watching."
Mm-hmm.
And from that you get strength, when you realize
exactly.
that the world's eyes are upon you and the atrocities that are being committed. I mean, the Chinese people were running to the journalists saying, please tell the world
mm-hmm.
that Chinese are shooting other Chinese, that this is happening. Nothing is more important than having other people know about it. If the media were not there covering this event, it could have been erased.
That's right.
It could have never
Which
happened.
Which is what the government tried to do.
They carted off the bodies and incinerated them before they had a chance to even be counted. It has happened before. It will happen again. Look at Cambodia. Look at what happened there. There's no documentation for that massacre.
There's no documentation for the massacres that took place in Iran or Argentina or all kinds of other places in the world. But when you have cameras, when you're looking at it, when you're reading about it, when it's in the news and when it's in your daily conversation, it means something. And you better believe that the Chinese government will feel the pressure from the rest of the world one way or the other.
As well they should, in my opinion.
That's right. Well, it's a fascinating story, I'll say that. Tragic, but fascinating. And I've learned a lot in the last couple of weeks about the human race.
Absolutely.
A lot I probably didn't want to learn. So, anyway, I guess that pretty much exhausts the subject for tonight.
Mm-hmm.
As I can see, our theme music has started, and our theme music gets started whenever the subject has been exhausted. I mean, that's our special exhaustion machine that we paid so much money for. Well, it's nice that works anyway. So thanks everybody who called, and thanks Phil for being here.
Well, thanks for having me on the show, Eric.
Okay, and you're going to be continuing now.
Yeah, well, I advise everyone to stay tuned and think about the issues that we've talked about as I play music or whatever. I don't even know what is going on, ladies and gentlemen, as usual.
Well, Bill Capozzi will be bringing you all kinds of neat things. Is Nick coming by tonight?
I don't believe so. It's around 12:30 now, and he indeed has not arrived, so I wouldn't expect him.
Okay. Well, I'll be back next week, probably, I guess, unless something dramatic happens. And we'll see you then, talking about who knows what. Maybe we'll do a silly show next week. That might be fun. We're about due for one of those. Eric Orley here, thanking you for being with us and for sharing in our thoughts. Good night.
Remembering games, days of chains and locks. Got to keep the lunies on the path. The lunatic is in the hall. The lunatics are in my hall. The paper holds their folded faces to the floor. Every day the paper boy brings more. Thank you. see all that you taste and all you feel and all that you love and all that you hate and all you distrust and all you say and all that you give and all that you deal and all that you buy.
We can't say no more. They follow like sheep in a wolf claws.
Thank you.